Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Clinic.com, an appliance and HVAC parts solution company that's grown into an international brand. Before AmericanEagle.com, we partially launched a new technology platform developed by another firm. American Eagle helped take our technology to a whole new level with digital marketing, software development, and business insights into our key markets, appliances, HVAC, and outdoor power equipment, and did so both on time and on budget. AmericanEagle.com has the resources, experience, and talent needed to produce solutions. Our new technology platform developed by AmericanEagle.com has produced tremendous results with higher traffic, conversion, engagement, and online revenue. If you have any home repairs you need to take care of, check us out at repairclinic.com. If you need a world-class website or technology project, then I would highly recommend AmericanEagle.com.
Call AmericanEagle.com at 773-NETWORK. That's AmericanEagle.com, 773-NETWORK.
Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. Wherever you are, we appreciate you listening. You can always listen, of course, on 92.9 FM ESPN, 680 AM. And also, anytime, anywhere on the Odyssey app, you can always stay up to date with all the great content right here from 92.9 FM ESPN on the Odyssey app. If you've not done so already, go ahead and download. You can listen anytime, anywhere. So if you go on vacation, you still want to keep up, you can do so right there on the Odyssey app. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is indeed with us. My company this week is a man that covers preps, 9-1 FC, the Liberty Bowl, and more for the Daily Memphian. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at John Varlas. John Varlas, good day, sir.
Good day to you, Jeffrey. How's everything going? Can I start here with a very mild complaint? I'm enjoying my time here with you. It's been a tremendous experience. Lots of fun getting to work with you a little bit. But these doors here at the studio are extraordinary.
The airlocking.
Aren't they very heavy? Do they seem heavy to you? And perhaps it's because it was upper body today. It's affecting me even more so than it normally would. But
certainly the doors in the studio are heavy. I think they're also pressurized or whatever. I would presume it's part of soundproofing.
Yeah, folks, I'm not going to lie to you. These doors here at 92.9 are wearing me out today. They're kicking my tail, but we're going to get through it and have a great show.
It is a Thursday, so normally coming up in the fall, we're not too far away. We'll, of course, bring back, of course, the tasting menu, but at times, what we've done is Tasty Take Thursday, and I'm going to direct you right now to the front page over at CBSSports.com. And here are just a few of the headlines of where we are on the calendar. Max Preps preseason top 25 unveiled. ranking college football teams' NFL Mount Rushmores. Which pitcher should start the All-Star game? MLB trade deadline rumors. Okay, that one at least is a fitting, timely thing. Belichick lands new analyst gig. We'll tell you about that later on during the list. Bronny struggles at California Classic. LeBron on another Olympic sport that he would compete in. Georgia players arrested on reckless driving. That seems to be a time-old tradition now for summer dogs, if you will. And the MLBPA is wary about playing temps for the Sacramento A's. That's where we are on the calendar.
Jeffrey, LeBron, Olympic sport LeBron might consider, that wouldn't be curling, would it?
Let's see. Let's try to guess. I'm going to say it's going to be a summer game to stick with the theme. So I'm going to throw curling out of there. What does LeBron think he'd be good at? Because football's not in there. He wouldn't say baseball. I'm going to say like some type of like jumping in track and field.
I haven't looked. I'm going to go with soccer. I don't know why. It just strikes me that he thinks he might be able to do that.
I was sniffing up the right tree, but I should have stayed with the running rather than the jumping. During an interview with Craig Melvin of Today, James stated that he would be interested in competing in two track and field events. I would, man, the 4x1 relay, man, and track and field. Yeah, I want to be the anchor for sure. I want to finish it off the right way. I mean, that's the thing, though. It's like LeBron is unquestionably an unreal athlete, but I feel like if we saw him running the 100 meters, he wouldn't even be in the picture.
No, it's a totally different breed of cat when you're talking about these sprinters, Jeffrey. And doesn't it just seem fitting though that he would want to be the anchor?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, not the second man, not the third man.
He's the one that gets the photo finish.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
He's the one that crosses the finish line when it matters. Yeah.
Holding the baton mm-hmm. up. Yeah, yeah. No, that seems strangely fitting, but no, yeah. These sprinters, they're built differently, Jeffrey. You watch these guys in action up close. It is amazing. It really is.
Oh, I mean, they just move so. It's unreal to watch just how fast. Like, and even like the guy that finishes eighth. To think about how fast he is.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like, whenever you see, like, Tyreek going and running the 100, and it's like, he's not even in the class. Like, and it's when you watch Tyreek on a football field, you're like, that's the fastest human being I've ever seen. It's Tasty Take Thursday, though. We did have some Grizzlies Summer League action. We got our first look at Team USA last night as they took on Team Canada. So I've jotted down some quick, like, gut takes and just kind of how I was feeling in the moment. So we'll discuss those. Eric Hastein's going to join us about 30 minutes or so. We'll get his thoughts on what we've seen thus far from the Grizzlies and more. We'll get into the list. As mentioned, Bill Belichick does have a new gig. We'll tell you about that. Also, we finally got the official change at the top with Team USA Soccer. I guess, John, our long national nightmare is over.
we can all breathe a little bit more freely today as a country, Jeffrey. Greg Berhalter's reign of terror is over after seven long and sometimes head-scratchingly frustrating seasons. But yes, that's it's going to be interesting to see where they go now. But yes, we are free from the clutches of one Greg Berhalter, and I know a large segment of Uncle Sam's army is rejoicing and celebrating.
It certainly seems like the soccer community online is rejoicing, although I've got some questions for John about that entire situation, so we'll discuss that. Also, the Titans had a free agent signing. We'll get into that. Back to the whole idea of what was on the front page, Jerry Palm's got a fresh bracket up.
Fresh out of the oven.
Out of the oven. We will discuss that. We'll tell you if the Tigers are indeed included. Also, we'll go back to something we did a little bit earlier in the week. We got a Matt Online segment. Someone had the audacity to power rank SEC coaches, and it's got people Matt Online. So we'll discuss that.
You don't say,
no,
Jeff.
Way. I mean,
do tell.
There are definitely like some, okay, this is a free space. Like, let's rank the coaches. Everyone will agree. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But let's start with last night, and we'll start with the Grizzlies. We'll go in chronological order. And the first tasty take that I had was, intellectually, I knew these two were not the same. I knew that these were completely different situations, so I don't want that to be misunderstood. But when Drew's tweet popped up about, I don't know, it felt like about 30 minutes before game time, before tip-off, when Drew's tweet from Drew Hill from the Daily Memphian popped up, Zach Edey, and I believe he also included, and Jake Laravia will not be in the lineup, ankle soreness. I had that same kind of like, oh, that I had when I got the Woj bomb on Sunday right before the NBA season started and we found out that Steven Adams would miss the year. Ooh. Now, let's be clear. I understood intellectually those are different things. I was looking forward to actually watching Zach Edey play again. And that was, so it was just the gut punch of, we can't do that. And then when you factor in just the limited options right now on television, I'd gotten my hopes up and maybe that was the mistake. But I had the same kind of, I had the same kind of internal immediate response.
Well, to the extent that you know, any sports fan is going to be invested in summer league basketball, I agree. I mean, you want to see the best guys, the most interesting prospects, the most enticing storylines. You want to see those guys out there, and Zach Edey is that. You know, I think anytime he plays, he's going to command the majority of the attention and the conversation and the discussion. So yeah, if he's not going to be in there, Jeffrey, I mean, like what's the point? I mean, it's hardly worth getting up and turning on the TV at that point.
I mean, I know the cult of GG will say GG was still playing, and that's true. We'll discuss a little bit about that because I have kind of a gut take on that as well. I'll say this though, when I also read Drew's story post game, I didn't start to feel better, and here's why. He spoke with Jason Marsh, the Summer League head coach, and this was what he said. We want him on the floor, and we want to see what he can do. We will see if he plays again in Summer League. We're not going to be reckless. You saw him turn his ankle. He turned it pretty good. We just have to be smart with it. I will tell you one thing. The boy wants to play. I have a feeling we will see him again, but I don't know. Right now, I can't predict that. So, obviously, with rule number one of this show being don't tell these story, tell your story, I consider myself one of the nation's leading experts on coach speak and double talk. And I can tell you, whenever you hear the term, guy wants to play, or something along the lines of no one wants to play more than he does, that's usually the bracing for he's not playing. I should also acknowledge Drew was on with John the previous hour, and Drew said, Zach Edey is not shut down. I just didn't like that vibe. I don't like, and again, I'm willing to also chalk it up to Jason Marsh doesn't normally do the post-game coaching. You know, he's not as trained, like media trained as other Grizzlies individuals that speak publicly.
Well, and you know, I definitely, you know, trust Drew's reporting on that, but to hear those comments, it doesn't sound like we will see much more, you know, Zach Edey the rest of the summer, Jeffrey, and it kind of speaks to the larger, you know, kind of philosophical approach of how the Grizzlies deal with injuries. I mean, it seems like, you know, number one, there's very little information that ever comes out on the specifics of injuries, but number two, whatever,
or it is a bunch of complex medical terms so that you can't read it.
Exactly. You need to
correct.
What is that? Blackwell's medical? Oh, that's the law dictionary. Mm-hmm. What's the medical dictionary?
I believe that would be WebMD.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you got to consult that to read the injury report, but it speaks larger to their philosophy on injuries, where they really, really take a conservative approach to you know, bringing guys back from, you know, any type of injury. We Marcus Smart, you know, I mean, all the things that happened last year, you know, there was so much thought that these guys maybe could have come back quicker than they did, and you know, we're not in the dressing room, we're not in the training room, we're just fans, you know, flapping our gums, but you know, just outside looking in, it seems like they go to extraordinary lengths to just make sure everything is, you know, perfect, you know, and just as good and settled as it can be before they even consider bringing these guys back from injury. So we might be seeing a bit of that too with Zach Edey. I don't think there's anything wrong with him. I mean, he played in the game after
after he turned his ankle. Now, I mean, it's always, you know, you can always point out, well, adrenaline could have kicked in. And then the next day, you know, one of the age-old adages, it's not how you feel right after you turn it. That's how you feel the next day. That's another big one. I think it's also, this is probably somewhat part of it. What was, and like anything, risk-reward. What's the risk? Hey, we still have at least four more guaranteed games in Vegas, and that's kind of the summer league that the league certainly focuses on and bring that attention. Let's not do anything rash. Like, let him have the night off. They weren't playing for anything, so we'll see you in Vegas. I think that is likely the answer. I just didn't love the nobody wants to play more than him. That always braces me for, oh, he is so not playing.
It does kind of feel that way. It does kind of give those vibes. But you know, to the larger point, Jeffrey, and you know, I think you're pretty firmly in the camp of if they do shut him down for the entire rest of the summer, that's not the worst thing in the world.
No.
But you know, talking just from a developmental process and from you know, continuing to acclimate to the style of play in the NBA and the style of play that the Grizzlies are do and how they're going to use him, you know, within the system, you know, I think if there's any way possible, you know, I would give Zach Edey, you know, a chance to at least get back out there. I wouldn't shut him down, you know, unless the injury is more serious than, you know, we're thinking, of course. But if it's, you know, if it's kind of a borderline thing and it's like, well, you know, let's shut him down,
sure,
just to be safe, or you know, let's get out there and get some more minutes and kind of continue to get acclimated, I'm leaning to the latter.
Yeah, I just kind of think that's the way, because I'm in the camp of, since he is, the Grizzlies are clearly going to have a different style of play than what he has played his entire life. I just want him getting more reps. And honestly, the biggest reason, though, is it just, I find it way more interesting to watch. Like, I mean, even with Gigi and whatnot, just, you know, it was another close game, but it was tough to be, like, laser-focused.
Yeah. Yeah.
Primarily because there's so many guys, like, you know, how many guys are actually going to play this year? Gigi will play. Scottie Pippen is likely to play a decent amount, but he's still going to be on a two-way. I think we're going to see Trey Jemison a decent amount. I suspect that he'll be one of the bigs that kind of floats in and out, but we're also talking about very minimized roles.
Yeah, we'll see some Laravia too, but you know, of that group of players you just named, you know, Zach Edey is the one that's going to be counted on to play the most and going to be expected to play the most, and the one who's, you know, contributions to the team will be the most significant. So yeah, I think he should, if there's any way possible, I would just love to see him get out there and get a few more reps. You know, if it's not going to jeopardize anything, you know, health-wise or anything like that. And I know I get that it's easy for me to say, I'm not the one cutting the check, Jeffrey.
No, but, for sure.
You know, but I'd love to see him out there. For those reasons, and for, like you said, it does make it more interesting. I mean, he's a fun basketball player to watch, and he kind of represents, you know, a bit of a glimmer of hope for this team that the fan base didn't really have last year.
All right, let's move on to, let's stay on Zach Edey, and I don't really know what the take would be, but I guess if I had to give the bottom line, it's Penny Hardaway, when he talks about basketball, is pretty damn good. And Penny Hardaway was on with Shaq's podcast. Jonah Dillon wrote this up. And here's what Penny said about the Grizzlies selecting Zach Edey. I think the Grizzlies had to make a decision on a center because we needed a center. And Zach Edey, come on, man. He's not some bum. Zach Edey can really play. Now, on this level of the NBA, it's going to be fast for guys. They're going to be pulling him out of the paint and bringing him onto the perimeter. But if you watched him, he's pretty mobile to be that big. He's not this slow guy that can't move. If we go on to continue, I think for the times they pull him out to the rim perimeter, he'll have to go out there and learn how to play. But coming to the basket, man, he's coming weak side. He's going to protect the rim. For me, rebounding and protecting the rim, being in that drop coverage, it might hurt them sometimes, maybe not, but at the end of the day, I think he'll be a bigger force offensively for them because you've got to account for him going to the basket. He can't switch 1 through 5. You just can't switch with 1 through 5 with him. You're going to have to go back to a hard show you've got to go and maybe corral and then get back, and the rest of the guys just kind of hold it down until he gets back. And then you've got to put him, the guard under pressure to make him make passes. Nowadays, I don't trust guards can make passes through these types of situations anymore. I think they have an easy route when it's drop coverage or a switch 1-5. They have it really easy. So there's a couple of things there. Number one, I mean, I think fundamentally
it's a good analysis.
That's pretty good analysis. It also brought up this other point because Harrington and I were talking, I can't remember if it was Tuesday maybe. The entry pass, like as the modern big has become less back to the basket, it is interesting to see. Part of the problem, I think, with getting Edie the ball late in the fourth quarter of the overtime game, guys can't make entry passes anymore. And it's like, in particularly entry passes to the post, because it's just not part of the game. I think he's spot on there.
I agree. And it's something that I've always always thought about and felt about Penny Hardaway. You know, you watch him as when he was at East as the head coach, all those years ago now, I'm sitting behind the bench, one or two rows. And sure, yeah, did he have the most talented team? I mean, there's no question about it. But, when he was talking to those guys, during the game, trying to illustrate concepts, plays, things of that nature, you can tell it's crystal clear that the man knows his basketball. He knows, basketball strategies, your tendencies, all the things that a coach should know from an X's and O's standpoint, which is, one of the things that's kind of been puzzling, why his teams at Memphis don't seem to reflect that. A lot of times they look so haphazard and not well coached. I mean, I think he knows his basketball, and I think that comment is kind of evidence of that. I mean, I'm no basketball savant or nerd or anything like that, but to me that sounds like a pretty on point analysis of how the Grizzlies can use Zach Edey and how Zach Edey can be in turn successful for the Grizzlies.
Well, you bring up a couple of points there because I've always, particularly in college basketball, I've always doubted the amount of get that guy on a grease board, the savant with the play sheet and whatnot. I've always thought that that's a little bit overrated because, like, when I think about, some of the all-time great coaches, like, Roy Williams wasn't known as, like, an X's and O's savant, like, Cal, the same thing. I mean, Cal has also talked about it. You know, when he was at UMass or when he was cutting his teeth, he was more about, running great offense and having the right play and whatnot. And then when he got better players, you kind of want to get out of the way and let them play. So I do think there's something with, like, I think my biggest issue is I think there's this developing narrative of Penny can't coach. And I just don't buy that for all the reasons that we listed out. Now, there's a couple of things, like, on the offensive end. Like, if you look at Penny's career, he never really valued the basketball. Despite having the ball in his hands a lot, he did turn it over a lot. Well, what does his teams often do? Oftentimes, they turn it over a lot. I think if I had to actually pinpoint what I would consider to be Penny's biggest weakness as a coach, it is nowhere near acumen. It's nowhere really honestly in game. I don't think he values team building and the program discipline that it takes. And that's kind of where I would say what you're seeing, the product that you're seeing on the floor that you talk about, it just feels very undisciplined.
Yeah, and team building, Jeffrey, is going to be really, really hard when you're turning the roster over every season as well. I mean, that you're going to get a lot of times things that look disjointed and maybe haphazard, maybe sloppy. His detractors are always like, oh, it's an AAU team out there. Well, I mean, that it's kind of hard sometimes not to look that way when you're constantly turning over the roster and you're constantly trying to fit new pieces into the puzzle every year. It speaks to the the lack of continuity and the issues, you know, that you know, still kind of continue with this program. But no, I think he knows his basketball. I think if you were to, you know, sit down with him and do a J.J. Redick style podcast where you go deep into the weeds of X's and O's and you know, that type of thing, I think you would see he's got a great basketball mind. And I think, you know, I think that's apparent. Like I said, you know, watching him coach on the high school level, I think that's apparent. For some reason, it doesn't seem like it's translated at the college level, though, a lot of the time.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the other thing that kind of they kind of go hand in hand is he has largely always viewed himself as a player's coach, and I think it's fair to say Penny is not someone that likes to deliver bad news. I think if you see like a lot of the problems, like even take the whole Joe Cooper ordeal that happened a couple of weeks ago. I have no idea how long it feels. I think it was a couple of weeks ago, but let's take that for example. It feels like part of the problem was just not wanting to deliver the bad news of, hey man, I don't really have a spot.
Well, or with the David Jones situation,
sure.
It's not even wanting to deliver bad news. It's even wanting to accept bad news or contemplate the possibility of bad news too, which might kind of, you know, color things a little bit.
Yeah, it's almost like I think part of like the player led and laissez faire attitudes. Like I get it. That's the quote unquote pro mindset. I mean, in the NBA, they're not babysitting. Like, there's a pro mindset. I just have never believed that works at the college level. Like I guess you could say Alabama seems to be a program that kind of operates that way, and they're having great success. But when you really start to think about like the players, coaches, and whatnot, it just doesn't really work at the college level. I think that would kind of be, it's like if you had to do like the program audit, the thing that I think that they actually need, and it's not going to be what I think most people would consider. I think every college basketball staff needs a good cop and a bad cop. You have to have a blend because, like, I even think back to when I was covering Andy Kennedy, his good cop, because Andy's always bad cop. If you ever heard Andy talk, like, you have no problem buying that Andy's going to be bad cop. he plays the role very well.
He is such a potty mouth, Jeffrey.
He says every word in the book, but God, is he funny. His good cop was a guy named Bill Armstrong. And the last year where it fell apart for Andy, Bill had gone to LSU and took the Will Wade job and got tied up in all that. So when he lost the good cop, that team utterly fell apart. Like they were horrific. I mean, I think they were like, they finished dead last in the league, but I mean, it was terrible. Andy gets fired. And then much of the core of that team was Kermit Davis's first team. That's the team that Kermit took to the tournament, Kermit's only good team. But I think part of that shows like the players are there, but you do need to have that program structure. I think there needs to be someone on the staff that really needs to step up in kind of the bad cop role.
Yeah, and you know, speaking too about the players and speaking in generalities here, but you know, college athletes, college kids in general, just people in that age range, they're in the weird kind of, you know, in between status. You know, they're adults, you know, legally, but they're not fully formed adults, but they're certainly not kids either, and you know, and having free reign, you know, doesn't always work for college kids. I mean, my goodness, you see that in the general student population all the time.
For sure.
These kids get away from their parents for the first time. Nobody to you know, to keep them, you know, keep them focused and keep them on the right road. And everything goes, you know, everything, you know, falls apart. And I think, you know, when you're constructing an athletic team, I think, I don't know that, I mean, I guess you would want to give a college team a certain amount of autonomy and freedom and the ability to make things, you know, make their own decisions. But, you know, it's this weird place too where you a lot of times you probably have to stay on them as well.
Well, I'm sure, and I want to be clear, like this is not the penny punching bag hour.
No.
It has to be harder than ever to be a tough-minded coach.
Right.
Because you always have the looming threat of, I'll leave.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And
yeah,
they can leave whenever, wherever. Like there's, it's not like you have, well, hey man, you're on scholarship and, you know, this is, you've already used a transfer. None of that matters. So I do understand that this is a delicate balance. But I do think that the part of the problem is just needing more structure.
Yeah, you're right. A little bit more structure, I think, would go a long way.
Although, weirdly, the guy that's probably the most maniacal coach in the country is the guy that's having the most success. Dan Hurley.
Yeah, Dan Hurley. Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, and he's probably, you know, recruiting those kids who, you know, that he knows is going to thrive in that kind of environment. You know, all kids don't have that mindset to play for a Dan Hurley. But for the ones that do, you know, it's going to be successful.
That is a fair point. When you sign with UConn, you do know what you're signing up for.
Yeah. Well, at least you should. You shouldn't be surprised, you know, once January rolls around and you're picking your jaw up off the floor because Coach Hurley, you know, lit into you.
All right, let's go back to the Grizzlies, because I was thinking about this with Gigi. So Gigi has a much better night last night, and mostly I would say it's just because he shot the ball better. But there were a few sloppy errors. Shot selection in general felt better. But it was a better night for Gigi. And I've kind of been thinking about Gigi in the course of this year. And what I kind of have stumbled upon is I think this is going to be a difficult challenge for the Grizzlies and for Gigi this year. And this is why I would say it. The Grizzlies clearly in this year are win now mode. And if you look at Gigi last year, it's the perfect spot to come in. It's a meaningless season. You can get all the shots you want. You can play. There's no consequences. And so just get out there. But now you're in this weird spot of development, and you're going to be probably somewhere around 8 or 9 in the rotation. You're not going to have the volume of shots that you had before. And more importantly, I don't think you're just going to play quite as much. And I think there's going to be this delicate balancing act for the Grizzlies. And I do actually think this is a large part of why you saw with the staff changes so much of it being player development. Because, like, I think back to, I've always kind of had the opinion the Warriors used to get credit for developing guys that I thought was unfounded. And if you think back to, like, once they got their guys, which is, you know, Klay, Steph, Draymond, and then Durant, whatnot, there's just not a lot of opportunity for other guys to play. And so I think it's a very difficult thing. How do you develop without playing? And so I think this is going to be kind of a weird spot for the Grizzlies. And I know, I'm sure I'm not saying anything that they don't know.
No, you know, his spot on the roster, you know, certainly he's behind Morant. He's behind Jackson, Edie, you know, anybody you project as a starter. So he would be also behind Vince Williams, Marcus Smart. Would he be behind Santi in your estimation?
I think so. And presuming Luke Kennard's back, which I believe everyone expects, like it's more of a timing thing. It's when, not if. So you're already, we're looking at
9.
Did we say Clark already?
No, I didn't say Clark, but he would be that. So we're already up to like 9, 10 guys, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be clearly a different role for Jackson this year, and he's going to have to embrace that, but at the same time, you know, find his way to kind of make his way, you know, within that role. And it's going to be tough because, you know, for a young player, like you said, last year was a dream scenario. You know, I just go out and play free. You know, we're already, you know, 30 games out of first place. You know, it doesn't matter. None of that matters. You know, I can go out and just kind of roll with it. And, I mean, there were many times, Jeffrey, out there when he was probably the primary option last season and you know, the primary scoring option. And that, you know, that,
many games.
Yeah, so that's never going to be the case.
Heck, there were many games where he was really the only thing worth watching.
Oh, there was one game last season where it was a total disaster, and I think the over under for Jackson points was, you know, like what, you know, 27 or something like that. I don't know what the number was, but it was
alarmingly high.
It was
a 19-year-old rookie.
It was alarmingly high, and I went on Twitter and guaranteed a 50 piece for Gigi Jackson because just with the lineup, there was nobody out there that could possibly score that night. It made total logical sense, you know. And some folks were frustrated because they lost their bet based on my recommendation. So that's the end of my touting days. But no, I mean it just speaks to the point where you know, it's going to be a totally different look for G.G. Jackson this year, and he's going to have to find a way to improve, and the team's going to have to find a way to get him up to speed too within the constraints of that different role this year.
No, I mean it's where I give the Heat credit, because they find guys, and it's not like, I mean, to me, it's like, it's the easiest way to develop. It's to play. I mean, from personal experience, but not, like, that's the easiest way to develop as a player. But when you're not playing as much, I think it's going to be difficult, and the Heat seem to consistently do it. All right, a couple of Team USA things. We might also get into this a little bit later in the show. But we saw Team USA last night. They take on Canada out at T-Mobile Arena, and I don't know. I guess this was the first kind of the gut take. I'm just kind of out on this whole Embiid thing, being on Team USA. And it has nothing to do with, you know, not wanting to field the best team. Number one, I don't think we need Embiid.
Not to field the best team.
Correct.
Right.
And that's fine. Two, this kind of feels like Embiid kind of mellow chasing, where it's like, you know, ring chasing, but medal chasing. Like, I don't know. It's almost like, all right, oh, I'm just going to go over there. Because I don't know if people are aware of this. Before hopping on to Team USA, he had had this flirting with Team France.
And the French,
yes,
the French, so, the French are apparently up in arms over this USA decision, right,
Jeffrey? So Mark alerted me to this story that The Athletic did. So Frederick Weiss, for those that don't remember the name Frederick Weiss was the unfortunate recipient of the Vince Carter Team USA dunk heard around the world.
We see Frederick Weiss every 4 years.
Correct. And it is still one of the most vicious, just unbelievable dunks we've ever seen. But apparently Frederick also has a radio show. And he had some comments, and this is back from April. And I thought these were takes. I consider this boy to be a great player as much as he is a dirty guy. I hate him for the things that he did. I think he doesn't have any respect for France and also for the people who were asking for a French passport and don't get it. And under the pretext that he is a great athlete, he got it. I find it scandalous. I find it embarrassing. I don't care about his excuses because they are his words, and his words mean nothing. Joel came to us and said that he wanted to play international basketball. He said he wanted to win. He said he wanted to play for France, and he wanted to win with France. So we listened. Sorry, that was Boris Diaw that said that. And then he also continued, Weiss continued on his radio show, this is where it really gets good. I would take away from him the French nationality, and I would ban him from entering France. You will not play in the Olympics. You will come to the airport with Team USA, and we will say, you don't have the right to enter the territory. Go to your home. You are Cameroonian. You are American. You are not French. Go away. Those are fighting words. Those are takes.
Well, he's edging up into Marine Le Pen territory there, mm-hmm. there Jeffrey.
I mean, there's no question on that.
That's outrageous comments, but I mean, I guess I understand the passion from the French side of it. You know, it seems like they might have, you know, done some things and maybe moved a few mountains and hills to accommodate him a little bit, and then you know, at a late stage, he cast his lot with America. You think that maybe had something?
Oh,
to do
yeah,
with it?
It feels like that.
Yeah.
Now, I want to be very clear. I would say to Frederick Weiss, like, this is the game you play, yeah, because France has been big on trying to give passports to beef up the international sports scene. It's their home Olympics. They're trying to have a good showing. Sometimes you get burned. But there's just something about the Embiid thing that's just not sitting right with me. And then there's also this other thing. It's like, is he good to go? Because, I mean, I know it was the first round of the playoffs, but it's like, he did not look right then. And it's just like, I don't know. I just really feel like there's an opportunity for another American center to play.
Yeah, and I guess where I kind of side with you is that Team USA doesn't need him. I mean, they're going to field the best team regardless of whether Joel Embiid plays or not. You know, they're going to be the gold medal favorites. I mean, honestly, Jeffrey, if you or I were at center, they would still be the gold medal favorites.
I mean, last time was a perfect example.
Considering the rest of the roster.
Right, when you saw the second team come in and you realized, like, oh, my God. The second team might be the first team.
I was going to say, they certainly looked better last night. So from that perspective, you know, I can see it in international sport, you know, a lot of your smaller countries that aren't competitive and they're looking for just a little bit of an edge or a little bit of a boost or just, you know, a little publicity, whatever. You know, yeah, it makes sense for them to recruit athletes from other countries to play for them. And it makes sense for those athletes, too, that wouldn't have an opportunity, you know, in their home country to sign up with somebody else. But that's not the case with Joel Embiid. He would have an opportunity with France. He would have an opportunity, I'm sure, with Cameroon, you know, but he's opted for America. So, yeah, I don't feel maybe quite as strongly about it as you do, but I can certainly see, you know, I can certainly see where people might, you know, have a little bit of distaste about it. It does feel a little.
It just feels unnecessary.
Unnecessary. It feels a little bit. You're right. It feels a little bit like, Jeffrey, like you've got a garage full of Ferraris and then you go out and buy another one. You know, you got 10 and you go buy 11.
I mean, did you really need that 11th?
Exactly. That's kind of what it feels like.
I guess car collectors would say, yeah, we do.
Well, I guess.
All right, and then my final one, quickly before we get to Eric. God, it's just nice to not have to root for Dylan Brooks anymore. Like, it's just like I was largely Dylan agnostic. Like I saw kind of the arguments on both sides, but he did it again. Like after last night, they get torched, and he goes through. He's in the tunnel, and they're doing like a media scrum with Devin Booker. He could easily have gone around. And he just walks right through, and the look on Devin Booker's face is just absolutely priceless. But again, I'm appreciative of everything Dylan did here, but it's just nice to not have to root for him anymore.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric Hastein joins the program. We'll get his thoughts on Grizzlies Summer League and more. We'll do all that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This season, Instacart has your back to school. As in, they've got your back to school lunch favorites like snack packs and fresh fruit. And they've got your back-to-school supplies, like backpacks, binders, and pencils. And they've got your back when your kid casually tells you they have a huge school project due tomorrow. Let's face it, we were all that kid. So first, call your parents to say, I'm sorry. And then download the Instacart app to get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes all school year long. Get a $0 delivery fee for your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Eric, you've got to get on the horn with your boy, Jason Marsh. He cannot drop the nobody wants to play more than he does, because I immediately do the association of, oh, that guy's not playing. Number one coach. That's coach speak rule. You know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, no, it means you're not playing, usually when that's said. So, yeah, I don't know. I'll let JBJ. He's a great coach. And, it's been fun watching him develop his career from the time he was a video coordinator with us. And, now he had a really good run with the Hustle, and now he's up with the big club. So,
well, the other thing, though, that's kind of it's fun, like part of him, like afterwards, post game, is the striking contrast between him and Taylor at the microphone. Like Jason literally just tells you whatever's on his mind. It's just such a stark contrast. Like, I'm not used to that with the Grizzlies.
Taylor was like that once too. Remember?
Oh, I definitely recognize there are two Taylor Jenkins.
He's maturing and learning as he goes. But Taylor is. That's going to, the time when Taylor took over in that 2019 Summer League when they won it, and Brandon Clark was the first guy to ever win MVP in both the pool play and the bracket play, that was a lot of fun. I mean, that's going to be one of my favorite memories of when my career's over with, of getting to know Taylor when he first got here and getting to know BC a little bit. And, Ja was there, Dylan was there, Jaron was there, everybody was there, and you could see that there was going to be a good group here. So, Jason's just breaking stride of what his career can be too. Wouldn't surprise me to see Jason March as a head coach in the NBA one day. And, I think that would be, that would be a good hire. I think Jason really understands the game, and you see a lot of these guys now come out of the video room where that's where they start and break things down. And, you got a couple of them, Taylor Jenkins.
Spoelstra, right?
Spoelstra, Will, or the guy up in
Will Hardy?
Will Hardy, yeah. He took Taylor's spot after he left and went into the G League with Austin. So in San Antonio. So there's a lot of that. So that says a lot about where you're getting non-former players as coaches, where they come from. They start, they start working in the film room and really develop that in understanding of the NBA game.
What'd you make of Zach's debut?
I mean, it's summer league. It's good that he went up against a guy like Walker Kessler. I think we saw I shudder when people go, he's not mobile. Well, I mean, he's 7'4", 300 pounds. He's not going to win a track meet, but he can cover space. And I think if you compare where he was when he first got to Purdue to where he left, I mean, you can see the growth and the development. And there's going to be nights where the speed of the game looks fast for him. There's going to be nights where he dominates because he's just bigger. And, whether you're catching a team that's tired, but I liked what I saw. I think that it was encouraging. And, now all of a sudden he's the consensus pick to win Rookie of the Year. I think that's, a little more than probably needs to be thrown on his plate. Just, go out and be Zach Edey.
Well,
go out, play your game and help and set screens and roll to the bucket and grab rebounds, tip in, miss free throws, stuff like that.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because Harrington and I were talking about this, and Harrington keeps up with he has a big spreadsheet of all the depth charts and rosters.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks it's likely that Zach is the only rookie that will start opening night. So that's, I think that probably plays into the whole Rookie of the Year thing too.
Possibly Sarr in Washington, right?
Yeah.
Reese Shea, who knows?
No, Sarr, because I think he was saying because of Jonas, maybe they're going to bring him back slower.
Yeah, that could be it too. I don't know. You could put him next to Jonas because he's not. Sarr's, to me, not a traditional big, and Jonas is. I guess they have Ariza there, though, still, right? I mean, not Ariza, Kuzma there still, though. So, you could put Kyle at the three. I don't know. I mean, it certainly seems he's going to be one. If there's any others, it'll be interesting. But it certainly seems that's a spot for him to continue to grow and try to earn, And that I'm a big believer, and if you think a guy has it and can do it, then get him in there quickly and let him learn. I think you don't get better sitting on the bench. That's why I think like what they've done with the developmental league teams or the G League teams now, where they're closer to generally where the teams play, and you can send them down and get reps because you don't get better sitting on the bench. And, you know, when the Grizzlies G League team was in Iowa, it's like, okay, you got to get to Iowa. It takes a day. Yeah. You got to get back. It takes a day. And then, you know, how long do you keep a guy there? So, and when the coaching staffs can work together, that helps. So I like seeing guys get a chance to play. Obviously these coaches are trying to win games. They see their practices more than anybody and see the tape and have an idea of what they want to do and what they believe in. So it's, I think it's interesting when guys get picked really high and you're saying they're a building block of the future, but they're not really getting any time to develop.
Well, it's interesting you mention all that because I was just discussing last segment that as we think about Gigi, I think that's going to be a big challenge for the Grizzlies this year because when you have a team that's back in win now mode, because I'm like you, man, I think the best way to develop is to play more. And we're going to see Gigi not play as much. I think that's going to be a big challenge for them.
That's going to be one of the primary things to figure out is where are the minutes going?
Yeah.
Because you need to have backup bigs, and you've got one in Brandon Clark, obviously, and you can slide Jaren over to the five if Zach is your starter and he moves off of that. But you got to find a backup, you know, ball handler, whether Marcus Smart takes some of those duties. When he's out there giving Ja a break, that'll be interesting. But, you know, you're talking about Vince Williams, Gigi Jackson, who saw significant minutes. Jake saw significant minutes at the end. You know, we haven't even discussing what Zaire's role would be.
And, yeah,
you know, that's another one that you got to – where's he going to be? There's no secret that he played better when Ja Morant was on the floor. He feels more confident. I don't know if it's just a mental thing, and when Ja's not out there, he feels like he has to do more. I'm not sure. I mean, I think Zaire showed flashes his rookie year, obviously, and then last year he struggled a little bit. So that can happen, and guys can come back and figure it out. And, you know, we forget these guys are 19, 20, 21 years old and, you know, still have a lot to learn. They're not walking in as seasoned vets. And, you know, it's with the way the college ranks now work with the one and done and, you know, the kids especially that were there part-time during the COVID situation and now, you know, were in high school during that. Where was their development during that time? So it's never a perfect science, but you're right. Like you got to figure out what you believe Gigi Jackson can become and what's going to be the best path to get him there. And that's what, you know, the coaching staff will work on.
Harrington and I were also talking this morning. Would you buy or sell this? Because he got my brain spinning on this one. Vince Williams will lead the team in minutes played.
I don't buy that.
So
I think he'll be up there. I don't buy that.
The argument would be is, you know, he's A, he said, you know, Taylor Jenkins plays him a lot. But then there's going to be this question of are they going to start Marcus or are they going to start Vince? Regardless if they start either, I think it seems likely Vince is going to be the guy that would play the most with both units, both the first and the second unit.
Yeah, I think that he's going to be up there. I mean, he'll be certainly in the top of it. And I don't know if you're talking total minutes or minutes per game.
Yeah, minutes per game really is what I was thinking.
What's the minute? Yeah, I think your minutes per game leaders are going to be Ja, Dez, and Jaren. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But he'll put his name right in there, I'm sure.
Do you think, because I was looking it up, last year was the most Jaren had played per game. I think it was 32. Previously, they kind of all it was kind of like in that 26 to 28 range, except for the one year where he only played at the end of the year, and like that was like 22 minutes, but that's because he was coming off the injury.
Sure.
Do you think that ticks up to like 35, 36, or do you think we're going to see more of like 32 is kind of where it's going to, kind of where it'll settle?
I think you're looking low 30s, maybe high 20s, depending. I mean, you got to factor in, too, when you have games where either you don't have it or you really have it, and they play 26, 27 minutes or, you know, 24 or whatever. If they just, you know, if it's a whitewash one way or the other, then, you know, those change your minutes per game. They can change it dramatically when you think about it. So I don't think you're going to see anything more than 32. Those days are gone. You know, you look at the old stats and you'd see guys averaging 38, 39, 40 minutes a game. That just doesn't happen with today's metrics and the science of the wear and tear on the body and trying to prolong guys' time in the league. So,
heck, and just the pace of the game.
Yeah, it's fast. But, I mean, it was fast back in the day.
Yeah.
it was fast back, you know, in the 80s when teams were regularly topping, you know, 110 points, and the 3-point line wasn't as big a factor. Shot clock operators just basically could go to sleep for a day and really not worry about it too much. Teams didn't just hold the ball, and then the game got to where, you know, it was just dump it into the post, let a guy go to work, do this, do that, and it slowed it down tremendously. And then guys could go there because you were having possessions where a big man got the ball with 18 seconds on the shot clock and dribbled it down to 3 or 4 and made his move. So it'll be interesting. Yeah, the pace, and I just don't think – I think with, again, the depth of the league and, you know, a lot of people, a lot of old heads will say they don't like the way the league is – or some of the things going on in the league with the, you know, 3-on-1 break and you flare for a 3. They don't like the sabermetrics of that or the analytics of that, but it does change things a little bit too. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. So, I don't know. I think you got to really – you just saw what happens when you have a year where guys don't play.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fun. So
no.
I think they're going to try to make sure guys are there and as healthy as possible.
Well, to me, it's like I kind of think that's one of the bigger questions for the Grizzlies, right, is what is the right mix of bigs when Jaren isn't on the floor? Like, I think that's going to be something they have to figure out.
Yeah, that to me, your front court situation, I mean, what are you going to do when it's a team that has real size?
Yeah.
Like Minnesota, what are you going to do when it's a team that doesn't have any size? I think that's an easier thing for the Grizzlies to figure out. But I think we'd all agree, and I think that you know, Jaren was better when he had a big behind him and able to roam and play almost like a wing defender that can really block shots and can hunt them and go get them, and that's when he won Defensive Player of the Year. When he has to stay down low, guard a big, stay in that mix, take the physical pounding, you know, the block shot numbers went down a little bit, the steals were down a little bit, but he still had an impact on the defense. It's not knocking what he did, it's just a different mindset. And so I think you got to find a place where he's playing to his strengths. Got to see how, you know, look, we saw Brandon come back and we were all really excited about that, but he is still coming off an Achilles injury.
Yeah.
And that's something you have to be cognizant of. What's it going to look like? What's it going to be? And so I think you look at that and look at, you know, all the factors involved, and there's going to be some times, and that's where maybe Gigi can come in. Cause I mean, I remember seeing him in the hotel in Atlanta when he got called back up, and I had seen him, but actually standing right next to him, like, wow, this kid is a legit 6'9" with arms that stretch across the room. And I was like, okay, so that's some size right there. Even I know it's not 6'11", I know it's not 7 foot, I know it's not 7'1", but I think he can get in there and help, you know, do that perimeter, you know, hunting type thing where you can get your arm and a hand in the passing lane and deflect the ball and disrupt the play. And it doesn't always have to be a steal. That's the thing people, I think, sometimes lose sight of, is that you don't have to get a steal or a block to have an impact on a play defensively. If you disrupt the team by getting a deflection, taking away an option, it becomes that much more difficult to score. I mean, I feel like I'm playing Captain Obvious there a little bit, but I do think when the talking heads talk, they don't really talk about that, but it's why coaches chart deflections. It's why they talk about guys getting hands on basketballs and, you know, even like on an inbounds play, when you deflect a pass or knock a ball out of bounds and now you got to inbound with 7 seconds or, you know, 10 or less, it changes what you can do. You don't have time to think about it. And how many times do we see guys kind of lose sight of that they didn't have?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.